Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 16th, 2020. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
It's time for another Cosenza Epiphany.
I hope it's better than mine, because I was just telling Laura that I had what literally seemed like a 30-minute dream last night.
Wow.
All I was doing was trying to pick an ice cream flavor at an ice cream shop near the Tower of London.
Near the Tower of London?
The most boring dream in history, and I couldn't wake up from it. And I still don't know what flavor I picked.
Keep calm and pick peanut brittle.
Oh, I hope it's better than that.
Keep calm and pick Rocky Road.
Didn't have Rocky Road. That was the
problem. Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Well, you know, I realized this week that my tournament poker career was over before it even started. So, you know how electrical plugs here in America, because I'm acknowledging we are worldwide, they have that one prong that's larger than the other, right? And every time I go to plug in something, I never have the plug right. I always have to flip the plug over, no matter how many times I do it, no matter what angle I come at it. Because like I work with a lot of power tools now when I'm working on these trees and stuff, and no matter what, when I go to plug in a new tool, it's like it's always the wrong way, no matter what. I think, oh, I'll even do like, you know, Murphy's Law, and I'll flip it in my hand before I go to plug it in, just because I know I'm going to be wrong, and then I'm wrong anyway. It doesn't matter, right? And then the other night, it was like the middle of the night or something, but I got up to get dressed, and I put on my shirt, and I figured, well, I got a 50-50 shot of putting on my shirt correctly, getting dressed in the dark. And, of course, I always emerge from the bedroom with my shirt on backwards. It doesn't matter, right? So, and then the other day, getting back to the trees, the other day, I had a 50% chance of rain. And I looked out at the sky, and it was pretty blue, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think it's going to rain, so I'm going to spray or apply the insecticide to my trees. And what happened? It rained. I always lose coin flips. It doesn't matter what I do in life. If it's a 50-50 shot, I come out on the losing end. And that's why I could never be a tournament poker player. Whenever I play tournaments, even in cash games, like if I go all in and somebody calls and then it's like a 50-50 shot that I'm going to win the hand, I don't win the hand. I always lose flips. And it's cementing it that I'm glad we chose the poker journalistic route for our careers rather than trying to make a living at Derby Lane flipping with guys who get it all in with third pair on the end and then, you know, suck out with two pair on the end, and I've got them crushed with aces. You know, it's just the way it goes. So I'm glad, but it took me a long time to realize it. I don't win flips.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to overcome. You can't really learn how to win flips by listening. Well, certainly you can't learn anything listening to this podcast. You can't learn to win flips listening to any podcast. So,
I mean, you know, people will probably write in and say, well, if you just become a better tournament player, you can avoid the flips. And I'm like, no, you can't. You can't avoid the flips. You're always going to get it all in with people, and it's always going to happen pre-flop, and you're always going to have queen queen, and they're always going to have ace king, and they're always going to flop an ace, and it's going to happen. You have to get it all in. You have to survive flips. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people who've talked about how they won the World Series of Poker by never being behind when they got it all in, but it doesn't matter with me. I can get it in ahead 80-20 and it's not a flip. It doesn't matter. It becomes a flip for me. It still becomes a flip. It doesn't matter. So I think I chose the right path. I'm glad I didn't really buckle down and study every book and learn every percentage and you know, memorize every tell and try to make it as a player, because I just, the fate had it that I was never going to win flips and I was never going to be a professional poker player. So very happy that I realized it. Just glad I didn't want to make that my career as a retired, you know, journalist.
Well, here's my advice is when you get the plug, flip it.
I did, though. I did, and it's still wrong.
Just never going to be right, so.
You know, that's why I used to get it all in behind once in a while, because I saw all the people from behind beating me. So I said, let me call the all-in with deuce-deuce, you know, or, you know, or something. And it just didn't matter. No matter what I did, I'd lose the flips. So I'm not going to pursue that career. Do not look for me on the circuit anytime soon.
All right, America's Card Room, one of the largest U.S.-facing online poker sites, released an article on its website this week detailing its efforts to thwart poker bots. Three things it says it specifically does are, one, using a Google CAPTCHA for players to prove they are human. If users don't immediately respond to the CAPTCHA, their account is suspended until they can show a video of them playing that can be compared to prior play. Two, frequently changing graphics pixelation so bots cannot read card, chip stacks, and more without constant reprogramming. And three, transparent banned account policy that posts details of banned accounts on the website and issuing refunds to affected players.
I applaud this. I'm very happy that it's not just, oh, we have a little program that detects, you know, I mean, this is pretty serious stuff, and it's multi-leveled. A couple of questions. One, if your account is suspended,
how do you video
yourself playing to compare it? I don't know how that happens.
I did wonder that as well, too.
I mean, did he expect me to go to, like, a live poker table and see me be playing that way? And then do they expect me to join another rival card room online and play there?
And the other question is, I would love to be the America's Card Room video verifier.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a job.
Joey Ingram and Doug Polk sitting there.
That's right, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
And saying, hey, oh, no, he raised with aces there. He never raises with aces. No, that I don't know.
And then the other thing was the Google CAPTCHA. Like, that's just for logging on, though. So you could log on and then initiate the bot, I would think, right? So I think. So
many questions, yeah. Not enough answers. Yes,
But I'm encouraged by this. I applaud them. Like I said, I think it's a great thing. I just want to make sure these things are clear. Because I read the article twice, and it did not explain how you're supposed to video yourself playing, or what they expect from that. And so they're obviously, they're raising some questions. But at least it gives you some sort of, hey, they're trying and they're doing what they can, and probably are successful at most of this.
I really like the changing of the graphics pixelation. That just seems like such an easy thing. I mean, I would have never thought of myself, but it seems like such an easy thing now that's really easy on their end.
Yeah.
I mean, you're at home. You don't really care whether the screen is, the table you're playing on is red or green or purple, right? But if, you know, a couple of tweaks of a code changes that, and then the bots can't read stuff, and then the bot owners have to go back and reprogram too, it's a little bit more of a cat and mouse, but... Certainly, you're a big cat, and that's a tiny mouse, so you're going to win that more often than others, I think. So,
one of the things that this made me think of was when they explain what they do, it reminds me of, I know someone who works with one of those safety companies that teach the drills to children at the schools for mass shooters entering the property or something. And I thought to myself, most of the time when these schools get shot up, it's by a student, and it's a lot of times it's by a student in that school. And I thought, you're teaching these kids what they're going to do to be prepared. So now if there's someone in there who's going to shoot up this classroom, they're going to know how these people are preparing to defend themselves against what you want to do to them.
Sure. Yeah,
and so you should not be teaching these, you know what I mean? So then I thought something like that with this America's Card Room thing. I thought, okay, they're teaching, like, the people who would program these bots and use these bots, what they do to, you know, to stop bots, and then they can just prepare to, you know, they can figure out a way around it.
I mean, one, even if you know what they're doing, it still takes effort to thwart it, right? So, I mean, it's not like you're giving them the keys to the house and walking away, right? So they still have to break the lock. And then two, I think really, I mean, what is the bigger problem? And this is a question, it's not a statement. the number of people out there cheating on these online sites, or the goodwill you get from the vast majority of players who aren't cheating by coming out and being very transparent and detailed in what you're doing to keep them safe at the table.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah.
I mean, there's a PR and customer loyalty bonus you get from doing something like this, even at the risk of making it a little bit easier maybe for the cheaters to cheat. So,
I do like the way you say thwart. I can clearly hear the T at the end when you say thwart.
Thwart.
Like, if I said it, I'd be like thwart, you know, and you wouldn't even hear the T. I always drop the last letter half the time because I'm from New England.
Well, you're from Connecticut.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I'm uneducated. But the way you say it, you're like thwart it. And I'm like, wow, he really emphasized the T at the end there. That was very impressive.
I've never thought about not emphasizing the T there, but now I'm going to be super self-conscious about it. Thank you.
Yeah, you can't say bowl.
No, I can't. Well, I can. I just can't say... Bull.
Bull. Oh, man.
Oh, man. All right, as if it isn't bad enough that an army of hackers are constantly trying to steal our private data, an article from TechRepublic.com says these hackers routinely compete in online poker tournaments where the prizes aren't cash buy-ins but treasure trove of stolen data or things like airline tickets bought with stolen credit card numbers. The games are allegedly very well organized, with hackers having to play three times to become a member of the games, and then play at least four times a month to keep their membership in good standing.
What I like most about what you wrote was that you threw in the word allegedly for the organization of this, but you didn't use allegedly for all the other illegal activity. That stuff's all verified, but allegedly it's organized. So I read this, and I thought... I mean, I couldn't even understand. I couldn't even understand the items that they were gonna like give people, and how. I mean, it's so over my head. I even the stuff they're talking about. Oh, they gave away this QWIH turn. I'm like, what are these things? That's how clueless I am when it comes to this kind of stuff.
That's why we're never gonna succeed as hackers.
No way. I don't even understand the prizes. And then also, I wondered about like. How do you determine, like, if you come in third place, you get the stolen airline tickets, or is
it's probably kind of like a charity tournament, right, where you don't get, there's not a cash percentage payout, like, you know, if you finish first, you get the trip to the Venetian, and you finish second, you get the Antium cruise, and
all right.
Finish 198th, you get a Chili's gift card, right, so, you gotta guess that's how it is.
I know, I got a toaster, by the way.
Yes, that's right.
I got a toaster. For finishing like 30th in the tournament once.
Yeah, you're right. I a lot of the stuff is well beyond my pay grade. But I did chuckle a little bit at the airline tickets bought with stolen credit card numbers and thought of Livia Soprano there getting arrested at the airport. And then Tony having to tell her to be quiet. So.
You don't rat.
But, you know, all right, so I'm having fun with it because I think you have to have fun with a story like this, right? But it is really frustrating. You know, the number of times I think we've all had our credit card compromised, and unfortunately I haven't yet had my identity stolen like some of my friends have, and that's just
brutal.
Horribly brutal.
Yeah.
But wow, I mean, not only did they spend this time getting all this information, but then like, hey, let's get together, let's get the home game tonight. And I could just see one of these people like, there's one guy in this game, right, that is always complaining that they're taking the stolen airline tickets out of the pot for the Kentucky Derby prize. I'm never going to be able to fly to Hawaii because you guys are playing your stupid game.
I'm telling you, I want the logins to all the ATM machines, you know, which is redundant, but you keep taking them out of the pot for your stupid horse race. And it's bizarre how they do it, and how do you... Like, how do you, you can have the tournament, but how do you, like, pass out the, like, who says, okay, I'm willing to give up my airline tickets for today's prize pool, and what are you willing, you know what I mean? It's even that, like, when it's cash and people are donating things, that's one thing, but how do you, all right, I'm going to give you the codes to you know, the how to obtain a bumper bracket for a 97 Saab. I mean, I don't understand how this stuff even comes up. How do you, and how, who puts the value on these things? Like, oh, those tickets are worth way more than those codes. And
I'm pretty sure you're overthinking this. This is no different than taking the nuts off your wagon wheel and putting it in the pot, or tossing a ticket to the Titanic in the pot so Leonardo can get shoved off the door by Kate.
It's our luckiest day in the world. All right, so I guess I don't understand at all. I mean, I didn't even understand the gift. So
fun, Chris, is what I'm saying. I think this is how hackers relax after a tough day at the office.
Yeah, but they're still ruining people's lives while they're doing it.
Oh yeah, but they don't care.
How dark is that? Not only are we going to ruin your life, but we're going to do it as a sport. And that's just sick. It's like those, what are those games, those movies where they hunt people? You know, they send them out in the wild and they go chasing them with their guns.
At the very least, let me watch this online, like on Zoom, so I can know who I'm rooting for to get my credit card down.
That's right, exactly.
That guy looks less criminal than that guy. I want him to win.
Oh, man, scary stuff, man. Scary stuff. First two items are pretty scary.
Yeah, let's calm it down a little bit. So through Monday, you can bid on dozens of items owned by poker legend Mike Sexton, who died of cancer last month, with all proceeds benefiting Poker Gives, the charity Sexton helped found. A number of poker photos, trophies, and other things, including his poker table, are available, but also several items from his time at the Ohio State University, including a photo of him as a gymnast, items from his Army career, including a service shirt, as well as household items, including a bed, will be up for auction. For the link, search for Mike Sexton Tribute Auction on Facebook.
That's really nice, really good, you know, keep his memory alive, help his charity, and just really, really feel good story there from someone who was taken way too soon.
Absolutely. I think, and this really shows the very good you can do in building a personal brand like he did, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was looking through these items, and some of them that you would want because you want a little be reminded of Mike, right? And then other things are just stuff you own. Again, like this bed, right? It's like, yeah, there's nothing on it. This is Mike Sexton.
Right.
But the fact that he spent a lifetime building a brand and building a charity, and then at the end you can really benefit that charity just from who you were and the kind of guy you were. So I think that's really, really cool. So
now, I didn't see the photo, but I think it would probably be the one where he's doing the rings and he's doing the cross where his arms are out, you know,
yes,
stretching
that was
out.
It.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it had to be that photo. I've seen that photo before of him doing it.
A couple other ones, but that one was one of them.
So. Yeah, yeah. Just
super cool.
Yeah, super cool. Incredible.
Definitely check that out, folks.
All right, good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm like, we're not at the updates yet. You need to do the reopenings.
Nope, sorry. Here is this week's update on casinos and poker room reopenings. In Pennsylvania, Mohegan Sun Pocono has reopened its poker room. In Indiana, Caesars Southern Indiana has reopened its poker room. We will have more next week, as I've heard rumors of a couple things opening up that I didn't get to before the show, so... All right. Go to anteupmagazine.com/reopen for those updates, because that's where we list verified details on casino poker room reopenings. And if you have any updates, email us at editor@anteupmagazine.com. And also look for that weekly e-blast that we send out. And you can subscribe to that on the homepage at anteupmagazine.com. Right, now it's your turn, Chris.
Yeah, it's time for Ante Up Dates. Papes, the Ante Up fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines, with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. So that means if you're listening to us on our official day, you're going to play tonight. That's Friday the 16th.
Right.
And then PokerStars also lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Ante Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Also, you can check out our 11 vintage Ante Up logo designs on merchandise at anteupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of the Ante Up Magazine, Ante Up PokerCast, or Ante Up Poker Tour logos. And if you have a Hand of the Week, listener spotlight, or call to floor submission, email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or post in the Ante Up Fans group on Facebook. We have a new O'Malley's move. Let's get to it.
Welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're at our regular $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em Casino Cash Game. The action has been fairly steady. There's quite a bit of raising preflop, but not a lot of 3-betting. We bought in for $1,000 and have lost around $200. We sit with $800. There is one uber maniac at our table who is 2 seats to our left. The blinds post, the under the gun and plus one fold, and we're in the MP with the ace of spades, ace of diamonds. Pretty straightforward here. We raise to $20, which is the standard raise. The maniac calls, as do both blinds, and we're going to the flop with around $80 in the pot. The flop comes down the king of clubs, eight of diamonds, six of diamonds. I don't like the diamonds, but all things considered, this might not be a bad flop for our hand. If anybody has a king, they're probably going to pay us off on a couple of streets. A set of kings doesn't make sense, since we weren't raised preflop, so really we're only behind eights or sixes. The blinds check, and we make a $50 bet into the pot. The maniac opponent raises us to $200. He started the hand with $1,250. The blinds get out of the way. I could go one of two ways here. I think raising is an interesting option, but I'd really like to see what our opponent does on the turn. We make the call. With $480 in the pot, the turn is the 8 of hearts. Maybe this is a misstep, but I decide to check for pot control. Our opponent shoves with little thought. So, we've got two pair on a paired board. What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Brandon Howe in the house, right?
Huff. Charlie Huff. Brandon Huff.
I can never get this right. Sorry, Brandon. Or he hasn't corrected this yet, so I don't know. Maybe he's waiting till we get the end of his eight hands to let us know who's right.
Okay.
All right, this is the third of eight hands he sent us. The last two have been really fun to analyze, so let's see if it continues here.
All right.
This is a live 1-2 no limit hold'em hand in one of the New Hampshire poker rooms.
Oh.
That is presently reopened, Boston Billiards.
Okay.
All right. Apparently, it folds to us in the cutoff with a 7 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds.
I don't know. I mean, I'm all for playing hands like this if you're, you know, if you're in really good position, if you think a raise is going to get people to fold behind you so you'll have position the whole way through the hand, if you have a reputation for something like, oh, he only plays big cards, well, now when you play this, you know what I mean, then people are going to think you have big cards. So now you're doubly threatening because you can represent any high cards, and if low cards come, you're going to hit them. So that's the kind of stuff I like. I like to have position with suited connectors. I don't like to play them out of position. You know, if you're in the cutoff, you know, you might get the button to call, and if he does, then to me it's tragic. At that point, you're just like, now I just got to, you know, bite the bullet and follow with a c-bet no matter what. Or so, I don't know. I don't like to be put in tough positions. But in this case, if I'm going to play it, I'm definitely going to raise. And so whatever the standard raise is for that table or what I've been doing all along is what I'll raise it to. So if it was me, I'd probably raise to 8 or 10 at a normal table, maybe even 12, depending on if it's a loose table. But any kind of raise, that's standard, I'll do.
Yeah, I'm definitely raising with this all day long. Again, this is one of those things that I tell folks when you're trying to expand your range a little bit, suited connectors are the cards that are good to try that with. And particularly in position, I mean, we're not on the button, but we are in the cutoff and it's been limp to us, so this is a really good time to take a shot, and you can represent a lot of hands with it, and plus your hand has a lot of potential too, you know, flushes and straights as well too, in addition to whatever you can make up that you can represent because you're the first to raise in position. So definitely raising. I normally think raise to 10-1-2, but whatever the table is. And our hero agrees. He raises the $7. Doesn't say that's his table standard, but we're going to assume it is.
Okay.
He gets four callers. Wow.
So someone must have limped because there's only the button and the two blinds left behind him. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so someone must have limped. Okay.
That changes things then a little bit for me.
Yeah, a little bit, because I would have raised more than that then, definitely.
Either that or I'll call at that point. And
yeah, that too. I mean, I like to have position if I can raise and make sure the button folds. I don't mind that either, and then put people on the heels of their feet. But yeah, if somebody limped ahead, I might have talked a little differently earlier about it. But I probably would raise more than because of the limp than just seven.
All right, the flop is the Queen of Diamonds, four club, seven of hearts. Wow, everything's kind of a little out of order here. Let's say it checks to us.
Well, I mean, you got to bet. Since we did raise, we represent, and like I said, now, if there's four callers, that means a button's behind us, which sucks. I'm assuming, unless there were other limpers that I don't know about. So, but if the button did call, I think you have to put out something. And so you raised preflop. That means generally when people see raises, they're not all crafty like Scott Long. They generally raise with bigger cards. So you have the option of representing that queen with your bet. You have the option of it actually being a pair that's bigger than the queen because you raised preflop. And you actually hit the seven, so you're not going in blindly. So I would make a bet. So if there's $7, there's four callers, there's 28 in the pot, so probably 30, almost 30 in the pot. Maybe, well, like I said, I don't know who limped. So, yeah. But if it's like 28 or 30 in the pot, then I'd probably bet 20, you know, something like that, 18, 20 bucks here.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I absolutely agree on betting here as well, too. So, I mean, we didn't hit this flop hard, obviously, but we did pair a card. We did pick up a card for our straight, and we picked up a card for our flush. So we got a little bit of everything here. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, we were the preflop raiser, so there's really no reason to slow down here. So, all right, our hero decides to check instead. Oh, wow, this is so crazy. I'm sorry.
So he checked, and then there's people acting after him?
Yes. So apparently the button bets $20.
Okay.
Two players fold. All right. Yeah, sorry. Doing my best here. two players fold. So let's say it's back to us.
Well, there were four players in the hand, so that means it's got to be someone else.
Let's see. The hijack is still alive. So.
Okay. So let's see. The hijack is before us, so what they do...
Right, yeah.
So the hijack calls, obviously, right? Or he folded too.
He's yes. All right. So the hijack calls. There we go. There we go. All right. So button bets $20. The blinds fold. Hijack calls and back to us. There we go.
All right. So we gave up control of this hand. If you think a check raise here is gonna work, which I don't think it will, with that many players in the hand, you won't check raise. You're not gonna check raise because you're taking the risk of too many people getting... That's eight cards out there getting a free look at another card. And that's not what you want when you're multi-handed. When you have a lot of people in a hand with you, you're not taking the path of, hey, I'm going to check because this guy's going to bet behind me. No, you're the one that raised preflop, and now you're check raising? That doesn't make any sense at all. So checking now is really weak here. You have to bet there, and because you didn't bet, I can't see you raising now. Plus, you have another person involved in this hand, so that means someone has you beat. So even if you raise now, I don't think they're going to believe you. A check raise here won't make sense. So
well,
if you're going
to put you in a really bad spot of having to continue that on the turn with a weak hand, I mean,
yeah,
clearly whiff on the turn. I mean, are you going to want to now put a sixty dollar bet out there?
And you're opening up the betting again to someone who bet the $20 and was happy to bet the $20. So now that person's probably got something like a queen in his hand. King, queen, ace, queen. Yeah. Even ace, queen wouldn't re-raise probably. So.
That, right? Because right. At this point, I mean, now you're hoping for a good turn card.
Yeah.
There are good turn cards could come. You know, we can get another one towards our straight, another one towards our flush.
Or both. Five of clubs would be perfect.
Second seven.
Yeah.
Six, so... There are cards we'd like, we'd like to get to that turn for the $20 now.
Yeah, the fact that you checked means you have to call here now if you're going to play the hand at all. I mean, you could know your beat and just check. So, I mean, you could just fold. I mean, but you chose to check here. You raised preflop and then checked. It's really a lot of times I'll say it's fishy, but not when there's four players. It's when your head's up, then it gets fishy because it's like okay, but now. I mean, you had to bet there, and you didn't. So I'm going to call and hope for a good turn, but I would consider folding too, believe it or not. I would consider just folding it here.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, here's the thing you got to think about. So if you checked this flop because you weren't happy with the flop, right, then you shouldn't be happy with the $20 bet. I mean, you should be just done with this now. I mean, you put $7 in, you got a piece of it, you didn't get enough of it that you're comfortable with. Let's go home now. I mean, it's not call the 20 and be out of position for the rest of the time, right? So
yeah.
It is a different story if you bet out here and maybe got raised. At that point, now, you know, it's a little different. So I think you there, I might consider a call. It just depends on what you're going to do here. I mean, I don't think you can passively play this to the end now. So, I mean, I think you're going to have to play back at the button at some point, but definitely not raising. So,
Yeah, fold or call. And my gut tells me that, yeah, I hit that pair, but I got a better and a caller. There's no draw out there, really, except 5-6. I mean, really. So what's the guy calling with and what's the guy betting with? And one of them is just trying to steal it, but one of them isn't. You can't bluff two. One of them has got something that probably beats us. So I would consider folding here. I really would. So because of the way he played it at that point. I would not have folded if somebody bet ahead. You know,
that's why I would have bet here, because there's enough here that I liked that I could confidently put that C bet in and fade a raise and then look for a good turn card. So it is kind of tough for me to get away from this, but $20 is $20. So
yeah.
All right, we do call, and so does the hijack.
Okay.
Our hero does say this is kind of a loose call, but I do a middle pair and a backdoor draws. All of us in the hand now have about 150 behind. Turn is the 8 of diamonds, so our board now is the queen of diamonds, 4 of clubs, 7 of hearts, 8 of diamonds. And check to us?
Well, I like that card. It hits both of our, you know, it gives us the straight possibility and it gives us the flush possibility. So that's a really good card for us. I just don't know if I want to bet and then be raised out of this hand. I'm not going to put my whole stack in on a draw with only one card to come. And I could be drawing to the wrong hand. You know, somebody else could have bigger diamonds, you know.
It's a good point. We don't know what we want here. We don't know. I assume we went the straight. The straight would be more advantageous to us.
Yeah, but it's still just a gutter. That's the thing. It's not even, you know, it's four outs. I'm not going to be confident in bet and put a bunch of my chips in the middle for four cards. So, yeah, so maybe you got four outs there, and then the flush isn't good. Then you're hoping to make two pair that, you know, might be good. If you have to have your own two pair, so you'd have to hit the six. So you have, what, three more outs, you know, so three more outs. So maybe seven outs. I don't want to be really confident with seven outs, and I've got someone behind me who's got a penchant for betting. So I think I would check again and then see what kind of bet he puts out. And then if he puts out something significant, I'd have to reassess. But at this point, I don't like just betting out here and then having the guy behind me who bet last street say, oh, yeah, well, I've got top, or, I've, you know, whatever it is, and then bets me out of the hand. So I think I might check again.
Absolutely have to check here, I think, the way we played it. So, you know, at this point, we want to get the show down cheaply. I mean, we don't have a winning hand right now.
Right. Yeah,
but we have a lot of potential with that river card. So if we can get that river card pretty cheap, and then we can then we have lots of options to us. So, but I don't want to pay any more than I have to see that last card.
Yeah.
All right. So we decided to bet $25. He says partly as a blocking bet, but I also picked up some draws, and I wasn't sure the button really had anything. And I had wanted to get busy on the turn. If I river something good, I could get another bet out of the button. He says he looks at me very suspiciously. He really does not like me betting out. He reluctantly calls, and the hijack really does not like calling either, but does as well too. So again, we're completely out of order here. But
no, we're not. We're the cutoff. So it checked to us. The hijack checked to us.
We
bet button called, hijack called. So we're okay. The problem is now the pot is bloated, and we have third pair. Right.
And I think it's interesting to me that our bet was only 25.
Yeah.
And we did not get raised by either of these people, right? So I'm looking at this turn card. What could they put us on there that if you had a, let's say, ace queen or even maybe like a 10 queen? Because no one re-raised his, right? So pre-flop. So are we? What about this eight of diamonds scared this guy that bet 20 out, right?
Well, I think maybe it's the action. It's bizarre that to have someone just bet now after you took control of the hand from him, and now he bets out. So are they thinking, all right, maybe he does have an overpair to me, but it's only, you know what I mean? I don't know what this guy, or maybe he has a similar hand to me. Maybe he has ace-queen, and I have king-queen, so I'm a little worried. So let me just call and then see what the river brings because I have position on him. Then the other guy is saying, well, I'm drawn. So now that you've bet and you've called, now I'm going to call because it's a draw. So I can see it playing out that way. If I'm sitting there at the table trying to put stories together, that makes sense to me. I bet out, and then the guy calls me and all this other crap. So then when it gets to the turn, now our guy bets out after we check the hijack checks to him. Now the button's saying, okay, well, I bet last street, and he's willing to bet into me. I'm really happy with my top pair, but maybe he has an overpair. I'm not really sure. Let me just call and see if I can make my own two pair. You know, who knows? But it makes sense, the calls. I mean, the guy would have to have a monster hand on the button to raise us now to 75 or 100. So it seems like one of them has a queen. Maybe both of them have a queen. One of them has a queen.
It's really our best case scenario is they both have queens and not have draws, right?
Right.
Because now if we pick up our diamond or our five, then we can feel really confident with it, right? But but if one of them has a queen, the other one's on a draw, again, now that kills some of our draws, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, the five would be ideal because no one's going to have that straight or a better straight than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
If it's not, because we have the six. So, you know, unless somebody had somehow 6-9, which no one in this hand has 6-9. So. You know what I mean? So the five is what we want. The clubs are, if they both have queens, the diamonds are better. But it could be one is on a draw, one has a queen. Either way, you know, I don't think we're going to push both of them off the hand on the end, especially if a scare card comes. So I don't like the bet. I don't like the bet at all.
Okay. So the river is the 10 of clubs. So our final board is queen of diamonds, four of clubs, seven of hearts, eight of diamonds, 10 of clubs, missed everything, and a check to us.
Yeah, I don't mind checking here. It may look like we tried to steal on the last street, but it may look like pot control now too, so they may not get out of line and bet over us now. So unless the button was the guy on the draw and now he's got no way to win except shove, he's going to want a showdown value and just check it. So I think that unless that's the one who was drawing, I think we're safe to check here and show our hand and hope that we, you know, we have the best hand. I don't think we do. And you could go into that way too, thinking the only way I'm going to win this hand now is to bet.
Exactly. I guess that's what I'm thinking. I mean, we have got maybe, a 5% chance of winning this with our sevens.
Yeah, if that.
That's probably generous, right? So to me, now the decision is, do we just surrender and understand we lost $52 on this hand, or do we bet and try to bluff people out of this pot? And the reason I'm more emboldened for the latter is that, you know, we donk bet this 25 on the turn and we just get calls. We didn't get raises. So this 10 of clubs should not have helped anyone, unless somebody was playing queen 10, as we mentioned. So, you know, I do think we have an opening here for us to put a not a crazy bet, but a decent kind of a bet that people would expect on the river with a made hand, and get these two players to fold and rake in a nice pot with third pair.
Yeah, that's the key, is determining if somebody's fourth pair. Determining if someone's queen is weak enough that one pair isn't enough to go broke on, like Daryl Brunson would say. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, you could imagine a number. You know, I don't know if it's a shove. I don't remember. We had like 100 and something, 150. Yeah.
Oh, so we both had 150 after the last bet, right? Or no, I mean, after the flop hit. So
after the flop. Okay, so
everybody's got 125 left now.
Yeah, so if we have 125 left, there was 75, 60. There's like 150, 170 in the pot. So
it's,
you know,
a shove.
Yeah, so if you can almost shove here, if you're the type of player that, again, it goes back to reputation too. Are you the type of player that has a reputation at this table that has shown down only big hands and has only shoved with the nuts or stuff like that? then it's like, okay, you have to really put these guys on not having monsters, which if they did have monsters, they likely would have raised since a lot of draws got stronger on the turn. So when they didn't raise you, they probably don't have monster hands. So you got to come up with a number. If you're going to bluff, I would say it's got to be 80 to a shove. You know, 80.
Yeah, I would agree normally, but it obviously looks like we're in a game where bets are smaller than they normally are, right?
Yeah.
The preflop raise was the 7, four callers, and so I guess the flop bet actually was pretty decent at 20, but yeah. Then the turn bet was not, though. The 25 was really, really low. So, I mean, I suppose you might in this game be able to get the outcome we're looking for at 50, but I do agree with you. I'd be more comfortable with
80. Yeah, I would bet 80. So. Yeah, I see what you're saying, but that could also just be a mistake on our part, betting only 25. The other guys could have played normal betting, and we don't know that.
That's
so.
True. That's true.
But I would have to bet something pretty significant to make them want to call with one pair, knowing that we woke up on the turn and bet out. Even though it was small, we still bet out into somebody who bet before us with positions. So to me, I'm just checking and hoping my sevens were good, and somehow these guys were both drawing and missed. But you know, one guy was trying to steal and then gave and then called because he was actually picked up a draw on the turn or something, and everybody missed their draws. Now I don't know if that's going to happen, but you know, I don't think somebody was playing queen jack nine. I don't think somebody was playing 6-9. Somebody could have had a 10 and now they've hit the 10. So you might lose that way to a showdown. But I really think one or two guys have queens out there, and I don't think you're going to be able to get both through both of them. One of them is going to call you, so I would just check.
All right, Hero says, I thought about bluffing but decided against it, and I think I let a really good opportunity go by. The hijack had queen five, and the button had king queen.
Yeah.
He told me after the hand that he would have had no idea what to do if I pushed all in on the river. So why didn't I bet? I didn't see a good hand to represent unless it was a set of fours or sevens. There were two opponents instead of only one, and the hijack really didn't like his hand on the turn, but called anyway. Well, I think kind of undervalued your spot there. I mean, again, I think it was the hesitation on their calls for the very small turn bet that is what would have emboldened me to push these both off of the hand. So, and I got to think if the king-queen was going to fold, the queen-five was going to fold to that bet they were talking about, even the $50 bet, I think, at that point. Maybe not, but...
Yeah, the other thing, too, is that I think he's right that the set of fours or sevens would have played it the way he played it, because, let's say it was sevens. So pre-flop, it gets to you, you raise with pocket sevens. Nothing wrong with that, because you only had one limper, and you wanted to have position, you know, so... And again, you raise with 6-7, so why not raise with 7-7? So you raise with 7-7, flop your set, pretty innocuous board, nothing there that's going to hurt you. And then you're like, okay, if I bet out now and they all fold, I'm wasting a set, so I'm going to check. And of course, I get a guy to bet, another guy to call, I'm happy with that, so I just call behind. Now that makes sense. Now the turn comes and the board gets wet. Two diamonds, three to a straight, middling straight, but still three to a straight. Now you're like, okay, it checked to me. I think I'm going to wake up now. I can't give them another free card if I check again. So now you bet 25, which was probably small, but also it looks like you want to get called because you have a set of sevens. So I think that story makes sense. The fours, not so much. I don't think you raise preflop with fours there. You probably set mine. So the 7-7 is the story, but then you kind of chickened out at the end. And If I were you, yeah, I had that in my head. If I thought about it and then thought back how I played the hand, since you bet on that turn, that was the key to this whole thing working, was the bet on the turn.
Actually, and I don't even think you needed to sell the sevens there, too. I think you just selling a better queen than your opponents, and by a better queen, I mean probably a two-pair queen, like maybe you had queen and eight.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have raised preflop with queen eight. The story has to make sense.
Yeah,
and you're not having a better queen unless it's two pair, and that doesn't make sense. Only here that makes sense is queen 10, and he didn't know he had queen 10 on the turn. So it has to be a hand that you would check after raising preflop, and it has to be a set. That's the only hand that would check there, and it's kind of a – it's a.
Well, again, if we're talking about people who are trying to put together a story, right, but we're looking at somebody who limped in front of us preflop with queen 5.
Right.
and then someone that called a raise on the button with king and queen, which is not terribly out of line, but
no, that's perfectly in this kind of a game. That's perfectly fine. The queen five was odd.
They both got spooked on the turn when we bet $25. So I don't know. I think. This definitely isn't the most sophisticated 1-2 game we've seen, right? So
right.
I think forcing people to kind of put the story together, I don't think, isn't as important here as it is elsewhere. I think here you just got to put some doubt in people's mind. And I think a decent bet here would have put enough doubt in Queen 5 for sure's mind, and probably the King Queen, as he mentioned. He wouldn't have known what to do if we shoved all in. Now, if we only bet the 50, then maybe he would have called. So,
yeah.
But really, I think you're dealing with folks that I think are not putting people on proper ranges. I think they're there to have a good time. And if you can convince them that, you know, your hand just isn't as good, then you don't have to sell a story. Now, obviously, selling a story is much better than not one, but not really necessarily a case here. I think you need to do that. But let's talk about how sick our straight would have been if it came in.
I know. Right? Yeah. Guy would have made two pair. You would have made the straight. And then the other guy would have had top pair, second kicker. And, you know, it would have just been probably the lights out for you. You would have made a bunch of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we say it often, but we don't want to sell short the 1-2 games. I mean, you and I only play 1-2, and we have the ability to understand that there's a story being told. There's so much information out there. I don't think every person playing 1-2 is someone blindly walking in with their check and shoving every time they have ace-jack. I think it's that there are enough sophisticated people out there that if you can get one guy to believe the story who has you beat, and then the other guy who just is scared because of the bet, well, then you've increased your odds exponentially by that bet. You know, if they're both clueless, then any old bet might do it. But if one guy's not, one guy is, you know, I think being able to recognize a story that makes sense in your own way of playing and then selling that to them, if you get one guy to buy it, that increases your odds. So, but yeah, it's a shame that you didn't bet there. And again, we don't know what happened. He even said the guy didn't know what he would do if you shoved, but it doesn't mean he wouldn't have called either. So,
exactly.
Tough. Yep. But yeah, if you know you can put somebody on one pair all the time, you can almost always get them off one pair. Almost always. Just depends on the bet size and the mood they're in. But yeah. 7-6. Boy, these hands every week, you think, oh, it's going to be nothing. You know, and then boom, it's always interesting by the end. This guy knows how to tell a story.
Imagine if we would have c-betted like we wanted to. I'd be interested whether King Queen would have raised us there.
Yeah.
And if Queen raised us there, then what would we do? I mean, on the turn, I mean, we're going to check that turn, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what he would have done at that point. I mean, if he's a decent player, he would have kept up the pressure, but he very easily could have pushed us out of this as well, too. So we had a lot of things working against us here, I think.
And that's one of the reasons why you don't want to not have position when you're playing small cards like this, which he tried to get position. He raised preflop, but it was only 7 with a limper ahead of him. You know, it should have been like 12. And then, of course, you probably still don't get the king, queen. The queen, queen's a button, right? So you don't get the king, queen, the fold, probably. But if we did bet out and then he raises us, now you check the turn, he bets on the turn, and you fold. And so, yeah, you probably lose the same amount of money in the grand scheme of it. Because if you bet, he raises, you call, there's the bet that you would have bet on the turn anyway, had you, you know what I mean? So no matter what, you probably lose the same amount. You just don't get to the river to find out. So it's interesting. The dynamics of this hand is pretty interesting.
Yep.
Well, that was hand 3 that he sent us?
So we got 5
so
we got more.
5 left, so this is the Brandon Huff Show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of anteupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.